It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 545. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Don't forget to use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have two voicemails for tonight. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, facebook.com/miketechshow, and also facebook.com/MikeNationNet. We have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows, the audio, the show notes. And again, that's mtswiki.com. I have another jam-packed show tonight, so this might go a little longer than normal. I have two stories I want to get to discuss. One, something that happened to me, and another one of what I ran into on Monday with a new client that I have to talk about. And I have the two voicemails that I'm going to get to right after the stories, because they are a follow-up to the uplink speed problem I'm having with a client. Then I have a nice stack of email. Let's start out. By last weekend, I was traveling, not far, a few hours from here, but was staying at a hotel, and I was away Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with my wife. When I got to the hotel, I needed to make sure that I had very good internet access, and one of the things I hated, I forgot, my Surface Pro 3, the Wi-Fi in the hotel was horrible, but they had wired internet access. And I forgot my Ethernet adapter. Now, luckily, there was a Best Buy nearby, but I hate rebuying a product that I already had. So I figured, well, you know what? It doesn't hurt to have two. So I had to go out and get my Ethernet adapter for the USB port. Got that. Then my Arc mouse, the Microsoft mouse, stopped working. Just all of a sudden. So I figured, boy, it's not coming up. Probably need batteries, right? So I get two new AA batteries, pop them in, or AAA, excuse me, or two AAA, pop them in, not getting anything. I'm hitting the button to reconnect. So the first thing I do is I want to go to the Bluetooth menu in Control Panel on the Surface Pro 3, where you go to the charms and you got to go to settings, then PC settings, then PC and devices, and under there, there's a Bluetooth. No Bluetooth option. Gone. It just vanished. Like, how can this be? How can I not have Bluetooth anymore? I'm shocked. I start Googling. I start trying everything. They said, okay, maybe the services aren't started. I check. I start they're right. The services weren't started. I started them. No joy. No Bluetooth menu. Then I read a post in a Microsoft forum, and I totally forgot about this, and this is the one tip for tonight. If you disable your Wi-Fi, Bluetooth stops working. I completely forgot about that. I remembered that once I read it, I remembered that when I was in my car and I had Wi-Fi disabled, my iPhone would no longer pair with the radio in my car for hands-free phone connection, the phone wouldn't pair when my Wi-Fi was disabled. I disabled the Wi-Fi because, remember, I got the Ethernet going, so I knew I wouldn't have the Wi-Fi, so I like to just go in, disable Wi-Fi, and I don't have to worry about it. Well, not if you're using Bluetooth. I enabled the Wi-Fi, and like magic, the Bluetooth menu appears. My mouse starts instantly working. So the takeaway, if you're ever having an issue with Bluetooth on a system, especially a laptop, make sure your Wi-Fi is enabled. You don't have to be connected to anything, but the Wi-Fi has to be enabled. Then you will be able to use Bluetooth. I totally forgot about that. And when I read it, I was really glad because now I was like, okay, great. Now at least I knew my mouse was working. And then I was happy and my Surface Pro worked great all weekend. I needed that just in case I had to take care of any clients. There were a couple things late at night, even while I was traveling, that I have to take care of for just regular weekly maintenance on servers and some of my regular retainer clients I need at work. So luckily, I didn't have any emergencies to take care of. Everything was fine. Now, Monday morning, I had scheduled a new client down in the city in Philadelphia. And here's the situation with the client. This is the client that I help. And I think I talked about it on the last show where I solved their software problem by editing the hosts file. Well, now we get a little deeper into some of the problems, and I learn that their IT support went bankrupt. There was another company that was in there that was using IT support that they shared, and that IT support went out of business. When they left, they took the server that is the domain controller, and there's no admin passwords at all for the workstations. They have no admin access to the workstations, no domain controller on the premises, and we needed to get admin access to the workstations. There's 25 workstations. So how do we do this? This was my challenge when I went into the office. Two things. They're all Windows 7, which was great. So once you know they're all Windows 7, you need two disks in case they're 32-bit or 64. And literally, half were 32, half were 64-bit. You need the Windows 7 repair disk. So I now have the 32-bit disk and the 64-bit disk. I had a link from a few months ago on how to reset a password in Windows 7 by just using that disk. So I'm not going to review that completely here, but I'm going to have the link in the show notes. So here's the steps that I had to go through. So once you boot up to the command prompt, the key is copying the cmd.exe, copying it on top of utilman.exe. And now when you boot in Windows, there's a little icon on the lower left-hand side. Once you reboot to regular Windows after you've made that copy, when you've booted into the repair disk, you get a real command prompt. Once you're at a command prompt, you can reset an account. Well, the local administrator account is disabled. So how do you handle this? I hadn't had to do this in a long time, so this was the solution. You type net user, and let's say Mike. We're creating a user called Mike. So I would type net space user space Mike space the password. So we typed just password space slash add. So now we're creating an account called Mike with a password called password. That's only step one. Now we've got a regular standard user created. Now we got to give him admin access. So here's the next command, which makes it happen. I then typed net space local group space administrators, plural, because that's the group name, space Mike, that's the account we just created, space slash add. Net local group administrators Mike slash add. We've now taken the new account we created and we added it to the local group called administrators. Now I can switch user on the homepage of the login. We log in as Mike and all's good. No. Now we got to get rid of this tether to a domain that no longer exists. So part of the procedure, I then say, we now need to demote the machine to a work group. So we go into system, we go control panel, system, go to advanced, then go to computer name and click change. And we now put work group instead of the domain. There's one other thing we need. You need to know the name of the computer. So let's pretend this computer name is ABC. You can look up in that screen and it'll tell you where the computer name is. You got the name. Here's why. You need a true administrator in order to demote the computer and remove it from the domain. When it asks for a username, it's defaulting to the domain. Well, we don't know any accounts and that domain doesn't exist. So I now have to type the computer name backslash Mike, the account we created, and then password. Now it allows us to demote the computer. One other step before that, I enabled the administrator account and reset the password. Just in case something happens, I want a full local administrator account and the account we created, Mike. Now, I actually used the name of the person when we created that local account. I said, look, this could be like a backdoor into all the computers. We used his name to create the account on each of the systems. So I spent about 3 hours going over this and documenting the process. So one of the employees who is acting as the temporary IT support now on site, he was a smart kid that was able to get it. And I armed him with the documentation and actually worked with him doing this himself on a couple computers. And once he got the whole process down, it moves pretty fast. I said, okay, now you got to do this on every computer. Now, there was a few things we had to remove. The IT company that was there had their own remote access program installed. We had to uninstall that. They also had expiring Symantec software. So I said, look, let's do some cleanup while we're touching all these systems. So we remove the Symantec. I then had him go to Nynite to install Microsoft Security Essentials and a couple other programs I noticed that were expiring, WinZip. So I made sure we put 7-Zip. And we just had a couple things that we, you know, made sure that would get installed. Once we did this and cleaned up, we just started knocking out the systems. And now he has a lot of computers still. And I haven't heard anything. It's been a few days. And knock wood, everything's been going good. I wanted to share those tricks. It wasn't just resetting an account, sometimes isn't enough. And once you gain the command line access to the system, now you can create accounts and you can add that account to the local administrator group. And I just wanted to share that trick. Let's get to some voicemails. This first one's from Kevin.
Hey, Mike, this is Kevin. I'm a cable technician and for a pretty large internet service provider as well as phone and cable. And I was calling in regards to the issue you're having on the upload speed with one of your clients. Interesting to note, I know that we'll have speed issues if you're branching a router off of a router. So maybe try calling Comcast and have them put in that first router into branch mode. Just a thought out there. By the way, just wanted to say I appreciate everything you do, even though I'm not in the tech industry per se. Listening to your show has actually helped me a lot in the cable industry. I really do appreciate everything you and Kerry Holzman does on tech-bets.com. Really hear great things and forward to hearing what you find. Appreciate you, bud.
Good idea. I have not solved the problem yet because I haven't been on site, and luckily there's been no issues. I do want to resolve this, and after tonight's voicemails and emails, I am now armed with some things to try next week. This is great. That is one option. I can have Comcast put that into bridge mode for the other router. I haven't done that. Here is the next voicemail, same topic, and this is Dave.
Hi, Mike. My name's Dave. I'm from Fremont, California, and I was just listening to an episode where you were talking about an ISP upload speed issue, and a couple of thoughts crossed my mind. I've been working with VoIP and telephone systems for quite a number of years. A lot of the consumer-based routers, and especially with services like Packet or 8x8, they rely on the QoS of your router, but they don't do any QoS outside of the office. So that's just a note. You know, what happens between your office and their office, you know, through the internet, you're kind of at the whim of how everything is working that day. With the QoS, a lot of the routers or the consumer or prosumer, you know, small business routers use bandwidth as a measure for QoS or as a bar, I guess, for QoS. So you input the bandwidth that your circuit is supposed to have, and it can do QoS based on that, or traffic shaping, I guess, based on that, where it will reserve X percentage of the bandwidth for whatever service you tell it you want to prioritize. So I would check out to see if you have any settings regarding bandwidth or being able to set the upload and download bandwidth that you're expecting on your circuit so the router can try to adjust accordingly. The QoS tagging, it doesn't do any QoS tagging outbound onto the internet because it won't respect the tag, and so it's not going to do anything. A lot of other services where it's not just through the internet, you've got the ISP is actually providing the phone service as well. And from that, they can do QoS through the entire call path from your business to their CO, and then cross over to the PSTN and then on to the destination. So just something you might want to check. Also, a side note, I had a customer that got 100 meg down, I think it's 20 megs up from Comcast, and the router that we had been using, I didn't realize it until we installed and I did a test, just a 10-100, and that did not allow them to use the full 100 megabits. So I had to create a virtual machine real quick using pfSense, which is an open source BSD-based router software with a lot of enterprise features. And once I did that, it was all gigabit and everything worked fine. One other side note, does the internet connection work fine with the speed when QoS is turned off on your Linksys or the D-Link router? That would be something to check. A lot of times the people that set up the QoS, I know you set it up on the latest router, but a lot of the people that set it up do it wrong. It just doesn't work. And that's the ISPs mostly is what I'm talking about. All right, Mike. Well, thanks, and I hope this helps.
Dave, you gave me a couple things to try, and I appreciate that. Now, the QoS, I do understand that it's only internal, and that once it leaves their site, the QoS is gone. There's an advantage to using a service like a net carrier where you can have your QoS through the internet up to their cloud-based destination and then hand it off to the regular phone carrier, that is something that you get a more, you get an advantage where you have someone doing an end-to-end implementation like that, as opposed to just the handsets and doing VoIP right on the premises. And then once it leaves there, you know, you don't have your QoS. And that's just quality of service. I am going to disable quality of service and see what I get as a result. Now, the ports on this particular Linksys, they are a gig. So I'm not restricted by that 100 meg port. I do want to make sure that I'm auto negotiating, and this is going to be an email, that I am getting the right full duplex with the router. Now, why do we have this router? We were given a very limited list of routers that 8x8 will work with. Anything beyond that list, I got to get approval from 8x8 that they say, yes, it'll work with their service. So I'm kind of handcuffed a little bit, two things. One, budget for the client, and two, my availability of what 8x8 is going to support. Let's get to this email from Chris. Mike, I'm a longtime listener. I discovered your podcast when I was evacuated for Katrina. I really appreciate the tales from the trenches, as well as the tips and software suggestions you share each week. I understand the support issues with using hacked firmware on this customer's router, but why are you trying to solve a business networking problem with a consumer-grade equipment? I have two Linksys E3000s, same family as the E2000 you mentioned trying to use, at home, and they're terrific access points, but I would never consider using them for a customer. You need a business networking solution. My suggestion is the Sub 100 Ubiquiti Edge Router Lite. I picked one up in early January at the urging of a friend who designs business networks for a living. He said they use these for small clients under 50 employees. They can't afford Cisco. So pair it with a good managed switch. I have a TP-Link TLSG3216 at home, and you're good to go. If your client needs wireless, you might want to check out Ubiquiti's access points. You can also use one of the home routers as an access point. Good luck, Chris. That's an awesome suggestion. I'm going to run that by 8x8 and see if we can get the router. You know, this Linksys that we paid was almost $300. It's not like we cheapened out too much, but if I can get something, you know, sub 100 that's a better class, I'm absolutely going to try it. This is from another Chris, so we got a lot of Chris's. I had a very similar issue with one of my clients where the upload speed dropped. In my case, they only had 18 wired devices, so I unplugged one at a time and rechecked the speeds. When I found the connection causing the issue, I discovered a patch cable wired with the A standard and all the other wiring in the offices is B. I changed it out and my speeds were right. We only have like 5 or 6 desktops here. I absolutely have to do this. Great idea. So as you can see, I'm putting a nice list together of things to try to get this resolved. This is from Tim. Mike, we had the same issue with the upload speed and we had to hard code the port status instead of auto negotiate. Once we had coded the port setting, everything works out. This is the first thing I am going to try. I appreciate all the recommendations, but this is so easy to try. As a matter of fact, a lot of these are, except the one where I got to visit every workstation, but I'm going to rank these and try each one, and this one's going to be first, and then see what I get, and I'll report back. But I love the suggestions that everybody's sending me. Thank you. This is another one. This is from Austin. He said, do a factory reset of the old router and set it up clean, just in case there was a problem. This kind of goes with the voicemail. In case it was not configured properly. Now the new one out of the box was a factory, brand new, and I set that up from scratch, and I think I set it up correctly, but that's a really good suggestion. One of the things that he had with a client, and he did the same thing, he just did a factory reset back to the defaults, reset it up from scratch, and that seemed to solve the problems. Austin, thank you. And this is from Bill. So we got two more emails on this. This is from Bill. Router recommendations under 300. Check out the ASUS line of routers. They are excellent for the price. They run fully supported ASUS version of WRT. The wireless range is very good as well. We normally like Sonic Walls, but not everyone wants to pay for them and their CGSS subscription. Bill, thank you very much for the ASUS recommendation. We had a lot of them linked from last week. And the last email on this topic, this is from Brad. Real quick, I haven't deployed one yet about VoIP, but I'm told by three different network engineers that handle VoIP technical support for three different hosted VoIP providers that Peplink is a great choice. I've done some preliminary research and found that there is a $300 option from Peplink that would do a great job for most of the business clients I work with. The features are definitely business grade, and the interface is reported to be very easy to navigate. Check it out. Maybe it will provide a good choice. I plan to give them a shot for the next project that comes up. This is from Brad. Brad, thank you for that recommendation. And again, everybody, your suggestions for the technical things for me to try while I'm on site, your router recommendations, this is phenomenal. This is exactly what this show is about. Bring up a problem, collectively get solutions, and then I'll let you know what solves the problem. I'm going to solve it. So it's just a matter of time and trying all of these options. Okay, some more email here. This is from David. Looking for a good tool for multiple OS boot menu. Mike, looking for a good tool to carry that would allow me to have multiple OSs on a USB stick, so I don't want to have to carry the DVDs and CDs around anymore, and want one that will have a menu choice that I can name. Thanks, David. Off the top of my head, I cannot remember, and I know I've talked about it, and I'm just going to do a little Googling before I put the show notes together. And anybody who's listening to me live, if you know the program, that there is a really great program that you can front-end your USB and be able to support multiple operating systems and you just pick from a menu, I know there's a great program, and I promise I will have it in the show notes, David. This is from Alec, and this is Auto Run Files. Hello, Mike. It is one of your longtime listeners, and this is Technical Technicians here. And I have a question that might work good in a show. I have not been as active as I usually am, but this is because I've been working on this project. I ran into a brick wall recently because of some files needed to be auto run, but with newer OSs today, auto run is disabled. Below is a link that goes over what I needed as I asked it on a previous forum. This is the problem. So I have files on a USB drive that when the USB drive is plugged in, the one file needs to be auto run. And yes, there is a way to do this. Is there a way to maybe write a script to have the files open up when the USB is plugged in on any PC? Thank you, and hopefully this can be shared with the community so I can get some feedback. And here is the link. Alec, if you remember those Cruise USB sticks, it was a U3 or something, I forget the name, where you have to trick the operating system that you're plugging in a CD drive. You have to kind of virtually mount a CD when this plugs in. And then from that CD, auto run your program. So I think it was a U3 where you could plug in a USB stick and it came up as two drive letters. I know a lot of disks that came with U3 enabled, it was difficult to get that disk to not do that. I'm not sure how you can make a disk U3 enabled, a USB stick, but I think that's where you should begin. Now, Alec follows up, "Hey, Mike, this is in response to my last email. What I ended up doing is having batch files connected to batch files to trigger the commands in the fields. What I noticed was even though I did not put the source location, it still ran the files as long as they were on the USB drive. So now, looking back at this email was kind of useless, as I ended up solving my own problem using trial and error. Thanks for letting me basically talk out loud. Catch you at the next show, Alec." Alec, I like what you did, but that U3 tip that I mentioned is a way to get a USB stick to auto boot, to kind of auto run programs from the USB stick. And that was the trick that was used on a lot of USB sticks. I don't see that anymore lately. I know it's got to still be around. If anybody else is looking to do that, you're tricking the operating system into thinking that it's a CD. I don't know why that is, that you can't have something auto-run from a USB. Very interesting. Thanks, Alec, and thank you for the follow-up. This is from Matthew. "Network product reviews. Hi, Mike. Thought you and your audience would like to check out this site. It is smallnetbuilder.com. I have been using it for years. They really do a great job reviewing network products and give good advice for purchasing. Let me know what you think. Keep up the great work. I always look forward to your podcast and get excited when I see a new one pop up in my feed. Thanks for keeping us informed and entertained." Matt, thank you very much. And again, that is smallnetbuilder.com. I'll have it in the show notes. This is from Martin. And Martin is co-host of Geeksters on the Podcast Network. "Mike, thank you for your show. On episode 542, you talked about the Intel speed step. I thought it was a great tip to store and thought nothing more of it until I remembered that a lot of laptops on a domain deployed at a school I manage booted so slow, sometimes 12 minutes to get the desktop. Could this be a speed step issue that is not enabling the network card and therefore creating a holdup with the login script and such? Try disabling speed step on the computers, and wow, what a difference. The teacher is thrilled to have his fast laptop back. I will be turning off speed step on all laptops tomorrow when I am on site." That's awesome. I'm glad that I was able to help. "On episode 544, you mentioned that you see a lot of viruses in Chrome than before." That is, yep, absolutely. "Something that I ran into is users logging in to their personal Google profile at both home and work." We need to hear this. "At work, we have security and policies in place to not allow for malicious sites and downloads. That is not the case at home. If a user downloads and installs malicious plugins, on purpose or not, when the profiles sync, all the garbage comes into your work. The default syncing syncs everything. I would either train users not to log into their personal Gmail account on Chrome at work, or be selective about what to sync." This is a great tip. "On a domain, it looks like there are group policies that can help with this." And here's the link. I will have that link in the show notes. I never thought of that. And that's it. And you are dead on correct. And I've seen this where users have logged in to their personal email account with Chrome, because it forces you to. It prompts you, hey, give me your Gmail account and password and log in. And then if it syncs with everything you've done at home, and at home you've been careless, wow. That's why if you're on a domain, you want to block the ability to add extensions or any syncing of extensions on all browsers. This is from John. On a previous show, you requested a solution for licensing documentation. I have that. And a solution for all documentation. Check out monkeybox.com. I'm not kidding. I've actually looked at this. MonkeyBox.com. Passwords plus services plus notes and files. All in one place, totally secure, shareable with your client. Awesome. And this is from John. John, thank you. This is from Michael. First, want to thank you for all your shows. I have learned a lot from them. Do you know of any safe websites I can download 7-Zip? The last time I downloaded 7-Zip, it added a lot of crap and hijacked my browser. Thanks, Michael. And I replied right away back to Michael, guiding him to 99.com. Anytime I need to install a program that's listed there, I don't go to the source anymore or any other site, because you're not going to get the malware. You're not going to get the junk installed. Go to 99 and just click 7-Zip and you'll get the right version. You'll either, if you're 64-bit, you'll get the 64-bit version. This is from John. You mentioned Kate in the last show, 544. She has a lot of input into your show, and I appreciate all of her advice, and as yours as well. I thought you were going to put a link to her newsletter in the show notes. I actually didn't put the generic link. I put the link to the exact article. So all you got to do is back up in the URL or click on the link to go to the front. So one of the things I'm going to do for tonight's show, the show notes, is I will put the link to Kate's column so you can subscribe. Kate offers a lot of great advice in her column, some great solutions and tips that are always, it's well worth subscribing to and getting the alert. You'll get an email every time there's new, fresh content that Kate puts up. I appreciate all that Kate does, and she's always first to respond when she can on any kind of help that I have, and I try to help her with her clients anytime she has an issue. I will make sure her column is linked in the show notes. This email's from Shane. Hi, Mike. Finally, let me start by saying I really enjoy the show. The content is great, and I really look forward to hearing what's going on in the show each week. I work as a tech support engineer for a local IT company in the Scottish Highlands. We are fortunate in that we get to do a lot of different work with a variety of technologies due to the diversity of businesses here. Recently, I've started doing some work with point-to-point wireless, where businesses cannot get a good speed from their local exchange, and then they use a wireless link to do that from another location, which may have fiber, a great technology. My favorite vendor by far is Ubiquiti, and they have a great range of kit, which can give great speed over many kilometers. I wonder if you might do some of your shows giving your experiences and thoughts on this topic. I'm sitting in a villa in Menorca, Spain, on holiday, and see that they use a PIP wireless link for their internet here too. Thanks, and keep up the great work. And this is from Shane. Shane, thank you. One of the things that I've done for VPN between offices, I have not used any Ubiquiti equipment, and I am getting overwhelmed from different directions, from recommendations from Ubiquiti and something else. I know a lot of you use that because you're buying a lot of Ubiquiti equipment using my Amazon link, because I see Ubiquiti hardware being purchased. And I thank you so much for that. Uncle, I give up. I am absolutely going to look into Ubiquity for solutions. There's another consultant that I work with for a large company, and he loves their access points and using Ubiquity to manage large implementations of Wi-Fi over big areas. Now we have this big manufacturing facility that we're going to be installing Wi-Fi, and we will be rolling out Ubiquity for a solution. So I intend to talk more and more about it as I get involved in the equipment. To date, one of the best VPNs that I have in place, an Untangle appliance at each location that acts as the firewall and the VPN connection. That's another solution where if you have two really good public networks that are working, that you get really good up and down link speeds, then you can put good VPN device at each end and now get your offices to talk. I'm going to explore all the different Ubiquity equipment as I can, as I'm allowed with different projects coming up. I know I'm going to be involved in the Wi-Fi. I know I'm going to be looking at some of their inexpensive routers, and I will report back. And I want to thank you. It's how I get involved in new hardware, new equipment from your recommendations, and keep them coming. That was the last email. I actually got through this faster than I thought I would tonight. If you purchase anything from Amazon, and I want to thank everybody this month, you've been doing a tremendous job using my link. Please continue to use the link amazon.micnation.net. Your price remains the same, but a small commission comes back to support the show. I appreciate that. Also have my Amazon link on the website, miketechshow.com. It's right at the top left-hand corner. That's below Instant House Call. Instant House Call gets prime billing. We thank Instant House Call for being a sponsor of the show, and I'll be using them again tonight. I got to mention, the sub-account feature of Instant House Call is great. I deployed it for a client yesterday. She needed access to her desktop, and I didn't want to use RDP over the internet. And since I had Instant House Call already deployed on it, I said, let's set up a sub account. And it's very easy to do. And now she can log into the specialist client, look for the systems that she has access to unattended, and there's just one computer, her desktop, and she can remote in and take over her desktop and get the work done. And worked flawlessly. And something I could tell you works, Instant House Call linked onto a system, and we used Instant House Call to link from that system to take over another system, and we did that together. Felt like the movie Inception as I was backing out. Anyway, great, great product, and I wanted to mention the some of the things that I was working on with especially sub-accounts. That was awesome. That's it for tonight's show. Everybody that's celebrating the Memorial Day holiday this weekend in the United States, have a safe and happy holiday. Enjoy the holiday weekend. I will see you back here next Thursday, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.